Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Talk about spectacular weather. It's on tap. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Ernie. And I couldn't agree anymore.
You just couldn't ask for a better day to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center or get out in your lawn and do a little work in your landscape or in the garden. It's what we hope for. Going into August.
Is it really August? That's the question I have to ask you. Is it really August? Because this is far from average, far from typical.
When I opened up the weather page to get the forecast, it said fall-like day for the next couple of days, or fall-like weather, I should say. And a high temperature today is only expected to be around 78, very low humidity, lots of sunshine, just a couple of degrees warmer for tomorrow, but again, loads of sunshine and low humidity. So get out in the garden, get out in the lawn.
I can't agree anymore. I went out a little further than you did with the forecast.
Oh,
I looked
you?
All the way through next Saturday and Sunday, which it's still supposed to just be this wonderful temperatures all the way throughout.
Could not agree more.
No, I love this, and I hope it continues the course, takes us right into the fall season, which we really, if you think about it, we're about 6 weeks away.
You know, when you mentioned that before we came on the air this morning, it just sort of hit me like a hammer going, oh, yes, that's right. It won't be long. There'll be that first frost. The leaves will fall. It'll be time to cut firewood.
Well, I like that frost forecast there, that first frost, when you start talking about frost. But really, last year it was late.
It was.
I remembered one of our customers, Patty Medley. She was in the store, and she had told me something that I have to remember this correctly, something that we were not going to get our first frost until the first harvest moon, which was in November, but we almost made it. To that point before we had received our first frost last year. So, you know, not everyone throughout the U.S. is as cozy as we are right now.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
So I'm taking it big time.
There's an awful big advantage to being right here in Mid-America where we have all four seasons and get to enjoy the spring, the fall, the summer, and the winter. It's kind of nice.
Now, what do you think about the folks up on the upper northwest part of the states?
I don't know anybody up there.
I've been thinking about those guys because a lot of plant material, when I say plants, you know, I'm talking about a lot of conifers and so forth, come from the Oregon and Washington State area, and they've been really plagued with some high temperatures.
So. High temperatures and a lot of fires, too. That leads me to this question. Is that going to affect plant prices in the coming year?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know.
Thank you very much.
Hey, when there's a little activity in the Gulf of Mexico, oil prices go up. Gasoline prices go up, right?
When Florida has a bad winter, orange juice is more expensive. You know?
Yeah, good point there. But I know that I'm sure things aren't as easy to take care of up in the upper northwest when it comes to some of the big growers, you know, taking care of the conifers and so forth. But that's a great question. I like it. Hey, how was your golf game, by the way? I saw that post that you had put out there on Facebook.
It was beautiful. It turned out to be a beautiful day yesterday. My good friend Dan Goodenow and Pookie and Mike Riley played yesterday. I hadn't played in almost 5 years, but I played surprisingly well. It was a benefit for Edgewood. Local services and some of the programs they provide for children. And I honestly had a pretty good time. You know, and
good for you.
Hit the ball well on occasions. And
great weather. You know, and when I saw that, I was like shocked.
Yeah, me too.
And I'm like, where did that come from? Well, you never know where you're going to surface.
No, that's right. But I do have a tip of the day because I hadn't been able to locate my golf clubs and finally was out in the shed and happened to look up and they were up in the rafters in the shed and had been there for, 5 years. And clearly the heat in the...
I know where you're going with this. Later.
All the grips were tacky. It looked like I had pine tar on
it. Jacked up. They were jacked up, weren't they?
It was awful.
Wow. Wow.
But, it turned out to be an awful lot of fun. I think we finished third out of all the groups. It was a good time.
Did you use the old foot wedge?
No, I didn't have to. I was pretty happy that I got to play the entire round with the same golf ball. That's a victory.
That's a victory. Especially if you haven't been out, in how many years? Five?
In about 5 years.
Whoa. Yeah. Were the clubs, did they have a little rust on them?
A little rust, some mud from somewhere the last time I had played, but, tidied them up as we went along, and someone had joked about cobwebs. Sure enough, one of the compartments of the golf bag was just full of cobwebs.
And then you come in with a clean game. The old man game is what you told me.
Yeah, that's all it was, is I just played the old man game, an easy swing, close to the middle as I could get, and let the big hitters swing away.
Good for you.
But it was a good cause.
Good for you. I'm glad that you got out finally. Maybe we can get out sometime. I'm playing today, as a matter of fact, out there at AJ Jolly. Mm. You said you were at Twin Oaks?
Twin Oaks, yeah.
And how was the shape of the course there?
Oh, great. It was great, And that's the one thing that I found myself different since we were doing this show,
mm-hmm.
is walking around the golf course going, oh, look at that. There's a crepe myrtle. Oh, there's a hydrangea. Oh, and the guys were asking me different questions as we played about different plants that we would come. Some of the grasses up by the tee boxes.
Oh, yeah.
It was kind of fun. But the real question yesterday came from Pookie.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Which was?
When does a twig become a branch and a branch become a limb? I couldn't answer that.
I can't either. I mean, what's his name? Pookie?
Pookie.
Pookie, you got us. I don't know what to tell you. Ookie Pookie, but,
Dave Winterman's his real name, but like a friend of mine says, do you know anyone with real names? If there's, Pookie and Worm and Ugly Buddy Russ and Birdie. And so that's one we're going to research today, Pook. When does a twig become a branch and a branch become a limb? We're going to look that up. We need to pause for a moment. In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back,
we're going to talk about getting the lawn together, because right now temperatures are ideal and the month of August is the best time to start planting.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Going to be beautiful today and tomorrow. Plenty of time to get out and still get some things done in the lawn, and quickly approaching a time where you can just throw up your hands and say, okay, we're going to plan for next year.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing of it is, too, I don't think this summer has really been that bad.
No.
Uh-huh. We've had some timely rainfalls and so forth. A lot of lawns still today, are green. And, it's a result of some of the timely rainfalls that we've had here this summer.
Uh-huh.
But right now, we're really in a fortunate position, in my opinion, and that's because of the temperatures. The weather's so conducive right now, as we've just turned the door and walked into the month of March,
mm-hmm.
to really look at your lawn.
August.
Look at the lawn during, while we're today, tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
the weather's great. Determine, hey, do I need to move on? Do I need to plan? Do I need to renovate the lawn? Do I need to do a total renovation? Do I just need to repair and all that good stuff?
Do I need to do the Robin Tidwell approach?
That's right.
Remember that a couple of years ago?
She tore into hers a couple of years ago and really did a magnificent job, by the way. You know, she was dealing with zoysia grass, and I haven't heard from Robin in a while, but I know that she really made it look nice. Yeah. That's for sure. But she had the equipment to do
it
as well.
She brought the bobcat in.
She brought it in and shaved that off. That's a good memory there, Ernie.
Yeah.
But, as we're in the month of August, I always say it, it's maintenance for the most part. But with the temperatures the way that they are and what the forecast looks like, it's ideal to go after some of the weeds, the broadleaf weeds, and even some of the grassy weeds that mm-hmm. are in our landscape, that are in our lawns. Because temperature is what it's all about when you spray herbicides. That temperature range, anywhere from 60 to 85 is ideal. Once you break 85 degrees, believe it or not, those products are not as effective. And whenever somebody sells you something and tells you to go after above 85 and 90, I would be very, I would have to question that, scratch my head and say, hey, what's going on here? Because weeds, they kind of shut down too. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're not going to take in the product, and they're just as stressed as the lawn is, believe it or not. And they're a little bit smarter than we are sometimes. So with the temperatures being where they're going to be the next week, take advantage of it. And one of my favorite products by far, we talk about it all the time, if you're trying to get rid of some broadleaf weeds in the lawn, is Weed Free Zone from Fertilume. And Weed Free Zone does a great job. There's a number of different, you know, there's a combination of compounds in it that make it really, really effective. That's dicamba, 2,4-D is a little stronger than what you find in some of your typical weed killers, carfentrazone. So this combination really gets into the plant a lot quicker and is more effective in getting rid of it for you, so you can turn the corner, go into the month of September, and be ready to sow grass seed. Now, the reason why I'm really honing in on this is, just as you stated as we start the show, Ernie, it's temperatures. So it's ideal. Let's take advantage of it. And then we'll be ready at the beginning of September. And, you know, it's also good if you have to come back a little bit later and go after some of the more difficult to get rid of weeds, like you talk often about creeping Charlie.
Yes.
You know, yeah. That is one of those you, you're, it's best suited to go after that particular broadleaf weed, you know, a.k.a. creeping Charlie. It's common ground cover is what we're talking about in the fall season, right before it goes dormant, because all of its energy is starting to translocate downward into the root structure. So it takes that product in, it's more effective. But I love this weather. And if you, you know, if you're having issues too with nutsedge, you know, that's another one I'm seeing in a lot of lawns. Not as much in mine anymore. I'm really happy with, I stayed the course. I would go after it year after year after year. It takes a couple of years sometimes to get rid of nutsedge. But this is ideal to go after your lawn, redo it. And I'm putting some emphasis on this because when you're using selective herbicides, always, always read the label. More is not better. We say that all the time. And on that same note, you know, when you're using selective herbicides, what's important to know, and when you're reading the label, is how many days you need to wait before you can sow grass seed. That's important, and that's why I'm putting some emphasis on this right now, is because usually it's 14 to 21 days, but read the label. All the products are different. The combinations are different,
sure,
and that's why it's important to read the label and not just go at it on a wing, you know. But are you...
Well, there's a place there in the back where we're talking about maybe just giving up and killing it all. And it's your favorite place, too. It's the hill. And that creeping Charlie has sort of taken over where we had some plants in. And so Lisa and I were talking about this just the other day, that we very well might just go ahead and kill everything off and start,
you know,
new.
And when you say a total kill-off, that's using a product like, you know, Roundup or Kills-All, which I prefer Kills-All. It's a lot less expensive than Roundup, and it does a better job, and it has more glyphosate in it. But the beauty of using Kills-All or Roundup is this, is that, yeah, it will damage or kill anything it comes in contact with, but by the time everything dies off, all you need to do is rake all that old stuff out, and you can sow seed right away. So there's a benefit there.
Right.
So if you're going to do a total lawn renovation, let's just say you want to get rid of everything, like what you're explaining about that big mountain in the back, is go after it with Kills All. And by the time it dies off, you're going to need to take a power rake or something in there and get everything off the surface. Make sure everything's graded out the way you want it to be. And, you know, just go after it and sow grass seed, and you're right on. And be ready to do that at the beginning of September. You'll have all of September going into the most of October, midway or even perhaps further, and the lawn gets established.
So if we do that, then would you recommend coming back and doing some early seeding again next year?
Perhaps. It just depends. You know, you need to determine, you know, when you do all of this, you know, just how did things come in? So if you have some of those areas that are still troubled, you just need to rework those.
Gotcha.
And there's a lot of ground we're going to cover this morning about, you know, coming back and getting the lawn back in shape. I know they're green for right now, but a lot of the green is good-looking clover. It's good-looking whatever, which is to be expected because we've had some timely rains.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, go after it. I mean, you know, and as we get into the beginning of September, that's a whole nother time frame when we get into the Fertilin three-step lawn program.
Gotcha.
That's just right around the corner, too. So even more reason to get out to your local garden centers and nurseries today, tomorrow, early next week. Get with somebody. If you have some questions about renovating the lawn or going after some issues in the lawn, now is the time to start planning to do it. Get it done and be ready. And I say this all the time, it's not difficult to get a nice lawn together.
Sure.
It's all about timing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to be a good hitter or baseball player, you got to have good timing.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back,
we're still staying in the lawn, and I'm going to tell you about a grass seed, too, when it comes time to sow grass seed, you might want to know about.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, so we had Robin on the line, but seems to have lost her. But I was going to ask her what kind of seed she used when she redid her lawn. And we were going to talk a little bit now about seeds. If you decide to just throw in the towel, kill everything off, and start all over again, what are you going to start with?
I'm going with the tall fescue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, there's a couple things you can do, too. You can sow seed yourself and just go with a good blend of tall fescues.
Right.
You can also, one that we've talked about often, and it's new this year as well, is Fine Lawn H2O.
Right.
Now, that's the formerly called Fine Lawn Elite, a great seed. Nothing's really changed. You're going to get that beautiful green, deep color in Fine Lawn H2O. You just get this element about it that it's drought qualified. So it will save you. It can save you up to 40%, you know, on your watering. And again, when we say up to 40%, you know, that could be 5, it could be 12, it could be 18. But anyhow, you know, you still get this beautiful lawn. It's going to use less water, less fertilizer, less chemicals, while at the same time still maintaining that beautiful overall turf quality. You can't beat it. And it's still going to exhibit that turf quality with tremendous wear tolerance. You know, that's what you get from Fine Lawn H2O.
Right.
And it's resistant to a lot of the diseases, including like brown patch and so forth. So less water, less mowing, and less fertilization makes Fine Lawn H2O a go-to, in my opinion. So look for that at your local garden centers and nurseries. Now, if you don't want to sow seed, you can always take care of everything, get it laid out, get it graded, and go over and see our good friends at Turpin Farms and wheel in the sod, baby.
Yeah.
And go at it. So you'll have an instant lawn from that standpoint, and that works really well also.
Mm-hmm. What about existing lawns? You know, we've had a couple of days where we have had high humidity, then a torrential downpour. Now we're going to be a couple of days without rain. How do you approach that watering aspect of a lawn now? Where do you draw the line and go, I think it's getting enough rain, but maybe not?
Well, not everyone's getting the same amount of rain throughout. We all get various amounts.
Mm-hmm.
And like you, you know, I always wonder when you do that Al Sleep hippy-dippy weatherman forecast and you get the amount of rainfall at the airport, I don't know anybody that lives at the airport. So we all get different amounts of rainfall.
Mm-hmm.
But what it boils down to is getting 1 inch a week. So, you know, if you don't have a rain gauge, use a tuna can. Leave
right,
it out there
right.
somewhere. You know, that kind of gives you a perspective or an idea just how much rain you actually received. But, and you can also walk out on a lawn, and if it's really dry, the lawn will kind of have a different texture to it. You can tell. It almost just like it has a sound, a crack to it in a way that you can tell when it's dry. So hopefully, you know, it's in a lot of ways, it's common sense. And, but get an inch on it a week. And if you have an irrigation system, I talk to so many people who have irrigation systems, Ernie, and I'm like, how often do you use it? What's the timing element here? Well, I don't know. It comes on every day for 15 minutes. I'm like,
whether you need it or not,
I'm using this car effects, you know, put the brakes on, you know, I'd rather see you water once a week or twice a week less often, but longer.
Right.
You know, when you're watering every day for 10 minutes or 15 minutes, you're just really getting, you're scratching the surface.
Mm-hmm.
So the longer drink, less frequent, you know, you get moisture deeper into the soil and your roots get, you know, they're better established. They go deeper. They're healthier root systems. So don't water every day for a couple minutes. That's the worst thing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
The best time you can water, too, is early in the morning. You have less evaporation, and it's just cooler. And also, when you're watering early in the morning, believe it or not, there's a lot of sugars that are exuded from turfs as they go through the overnight hours, and you get that dew. Sometimes that's really what brings about some of your lawn diseases. So when you are watering early in the morning, you're washing that off.
See, you know, that the sugar element, I was absolutely surprised by. I just didn't associate the two of them, sugar and grass growing, but that's important. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. Several ways to stay connected with us. Make sure you take the time to jump on to our Facebook page. Tony has posted a couple of great plants and even a beautiful little moth we're going to talk about.
Did you see that moth?
I did.
Man, he's like huge.
Yeah. When we come back,
we're going to stay in the lawn. We're going to talk about some of the products that you still need to use to get rid of some of the pesky weeds, the broadleaf weeds. And how do you apply those products? You know, what are you going to use? That's what we're going to touch base with when we come back. 749-B105. Talk to you in a minute.
Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. It's going to be a spectacular day to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center. Still product out there. Still time to plant. Still a great day to visit and make plans for next year.
The upcoming fall season is what it's all about.
Right.
So we've been fortunate. You know, everything, I think, so far this summer has shaken out fairly well.
Yeah. And I'm sure our friends out at Baton's have probably already converted over to the mums.
Oh, everybody's growing mums right now.
And
yes.
They've got their greenhouses cooking. They're going to be mums. It's going to be gorgeous this year.
Yeah, you're starting to see mums cracking some color as well, as far as that goes. You know, a lot of it has to do with, you know, the weather we're having, the temperatures and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where all that comes into play. I will also caution you about, you know, since you brought up mums and purchasing mums, you know, purchase your mums from local garden centers and nurseries and pick up things that have been locally grown.
Mm.
And you can always tell a well-grown mum from this standpoint that they have nice shape to them, nice structure, a nice width. When you see a nice rounded look or width on a mum, I can tell you that that mum was spaced out in a timely fashion,
mm-hmm.
and grown for quality and not, you know, quantity.
Sure.
A lot of times you see these mums that have, they don't look nice and rounded like they should. They're straight up. And what that tells me when I'm looking at a mum, I can tell you how it's been grown, what type of situation. They're crowded, so they're reaching for light. They're competing with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how some of these big growers grow for the box stores.
Right.
Keep that in mind. You want that nice, symmetrical look, rounded look, and you can tell a good locally grown mum or from a quality grower than you can from somebody that's just merely growing for numbers and pushing it out to make a sale. Buy a good quality plant,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to find a quality mum at your local garden centers and nurseries. They're not quite ready yet. So just back off a little bit. Enjoy what you have already planted in your window boxes or, you know, in your landscape and in your containers. We're not far away. But I will tell you this. You will see some mums in color unless you're having a party and you don't have anything blooming. That's one thing. But when those mums are blooming, when you see them at those big box stores, you are not going to get the longevity out of those. You're going to have to replace those and pick up mums a little bit later. So they have been forced. They have been shaded. So that's where that all comes from.
Mm-hmm.
All right, enough of my antics there. You had to bring up the mum, didn't you? A great plant, to say the least.
Yeah.
But we were talking about lawns, and what I really want to hone in on, as a homeowner, there's a couple of ways that you can apply these products. And when we talk about weed-free zone from Fertilum, I like this particular product amongst the other products that Fertilum puts out there for our lawns. But weed-free zone comes in three different types of applications or ways to apply it. The first being what we call an RTU, ready to use. It's like a trigger spray. So that's really for the homeowner or for the person. It just has a couple of weeds here and there, and you just want a spot treat. Mm-hmm. That makes it that easy.
Sure.
You can also buy it in a concentrated form, which you will have to mix into a tank sprayer of some sort. And we're going to get to tank sprayers in a moment. So the concentrate, it gives you the flexibility to mix it up at any given time and use it for however long you want, or if you have large areas in particular. So the concentrate is going to be a better value for you, and you're going to get a lot more for your buck. The other way that you can apply it is what we call an RTS, which is ready to spray. And when we talk about ready to spray products, that is for the homeowner who has ample enough hose or length to attach that. It's a hose end type of product, and you can just spray from that standpoint. I do want to tell you this. If you have some issues in the lawn, maybe you have some clover patches, and you're using an RTS, a hose end type of product, what you can do, the save product, you don't need to spray the entire lawn, just the areas that are riddled with weeds. So therefore, don't waste the product on good turf.
Good point.
Yeah. And you always, this is very, very important. Do not mow a couple of days before you apply any of these products. And please refrain from mowing a couple of days after you apply these products. And everybody that we spray with whatever application, it's always great to do it after we've had a rainfall. The products are more effective. And temperature comes into play. So, you know, you have the RTU, you have the concentrated form, and you have the hose end form. That's, I think that makes it very easy for the homeowner to use. You know, the RTUs, and I'm going to touch base on this, you can probably spend about $8 to $10 on an RTU. All right. A concentrate may run you about $14 to $20. And a hose end is going to be a little bit more money because you're paying for the hose end product.
Sure.
But you can always keep that hose end product, and that's going to run you about $35 to $40. But the beauty of that is you can always keep the hose end product as your applicator and just buy the concentrated form of weed-free zone and pour right into it as a refill.
So I didn't think of that.
Keep that in mind. So that's one of the benefits to this. So, you know, it's an investment, and it's something you can keep around for up to, you know, at least 3 years. The shelf life of these products is usually around 3 years, give or take, as long as they're not outside in a shed like yours, where it, or like mine, you know, it's detached, that freezes, because then everything just falls apart.
Sure. Now, is the weed-free zone also going to help me with my nuts edge?
Unfortunately, no.
Okay, so I've got to have a different product for that.
You need a different product, unfortunately. Okay. And it would be really nice if we could just say, hey, can we encompass everything into one kind of solution?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we cannot. There's a lot of government regulations that's involved here. There's also some issues with different chemical compounds not playing well with one another when you mix them.
That's right.
So that's where a lot of that comes into play. So totally a different product, Ernie. When you're going after nuts edge, are you having some issues with nuts
just
edge?
Just right out there in the front. There's a little swale by the front porch as you walk out, and it seems to have all blown into that corner.
The stud,
it's almost like a half moon sort of thing.
You're connected to me.
I know.
Why aren't you getting the product?
Well, I was down at Jackson's and picked up the weed-free zone. I treated that last week, so we were approaching that first, and then the nuts edge is the next.
Right. Do you have a tank sprayer, by the way?
I have two of them.
You have two?
Yes.
I think every homeowner should have at least one, and if you can pull it off or, you know, go the expenditure route, get two.
Yeah.
Label those tank sprayers. Yep. Take care of those tank sprayers. And just always make sure that you know what's in that tank sprayer so you don't spray something else accidentally. Happens often.
Don't want to, oops.
No, you don't want to do that. And always thoroughly clean out the tank sprayer. You'll be glad that you did, and you'll have a tank sprayer for a long time.
Sure. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment when we come back.
We're going to talk about what's been bugging some people in the vegetable garden, and it has a lot to do with the squash vine borer.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And what is bugging you? What could be bugging you, Tony?
What's bugging us? And it's the squash vine borer. And unfortunately, and I'm going to take blame to this. I think we should have talked about this a little earlier in the season, my fault. But usually we don't think about it until after we start seeing the outcome of what happens to some of our pumpkins, squash, watermelons, cucumbers, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when you walk outside one day and you happen to look at the plant and it's just totally collapsed.
Yeah.
And it's not a good sign. Sometimes you can find a little squash vine borer inside the stem of your plant and put a little slit in the stem and do it in a horizontal fashion, you know, along with the vine itself. And sometimes you can remove that little pesky fellow before there's too much damage or it's too far gone. And a lot of times people will also take those vines and kind of get them rooted in along the way as they vine out. But typically, unfortunately, when we see this particular issue, most of the damage has been done.
Uh-huh.
And that's when we see the symptoms right now this time of year. And it's a moth that is the culprit. And what happens is this particular moth, she will lay her eggs, you know, underneath the leaf or near the plant itself. And in about 7 to 10 days, those eggs will hatch.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately, that little larva goes right into the stem of the plant.
Gotcha.
So, you know, if you ever see sawdust like frass or anything near the base of the plant,
mm-hmm.
of your vines and so forth, that's evidence of the squash vine borer.
The droppings?
That's the frass. It's like how they just bore into the outer part and get mm-hmm. inside to the vining stem itself.
And that debris falls down, that should be an indicator.
You see it usually. You got to really pay close attention to stuff like that. Unfortunately, when we see the issue, it's like, wow, it's already happened, and it's a little too late.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult to control the borer once it's inside the vine. And I've heard of people doing this. They'll go out in the evening, and I've never done this, and I thought this was interesting, and I might try it. My next-door neighbor has pumpkins.
Oh.
So, and his vines look good, by the way. It's take a flashlight, and usually inside, you know, if you put it up next to the vine itself, mm-hmm. it's you can kind of see through it.
Right.
In a way. But if there's a borer in there, you'll see a little black, you'll see it inside.
Right.
And I've heard of people taking straight pins and just sticking right through it.
Shish kebab it.
Shish kebab it. But how effective that is, I don't know. But I've heard of people doing that and saying they've, and then you can remove it.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting approach, to say the least. And actually, the whole life cycle of the squash vine borer is interesting, too. And usually they'll spend about 2 to 4 weeks just, you know, getting fat like you, eating inside. I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry, Ernie.
It doesn't bother me.
No, I know. Yeah. You take it all well.
Mm.
You're good. But, you know, they'll spend about 2 to 4 weeks inside the vine. And by then, you know, you're noticing some collapse and so forth. And that's unfortunate. But, you know, and then they drop to the soil. They'll come out. And as a larva or pupae, they will stay in the soil, and they'll go down an inch or so, and they'll reside in the soil until next year. So,
yeah,
it's always good if you have these issues to practice good sanitary approaches to gardening and, you know, discarding all of this stuff because, you know, throw it away. You don't want it lying around. And what you can do from a management standpoint is – use sprays before you see activity. All right? You can use anything that's got bifenthrin in it. You can also use anything that's got pyrethroids in it. And you can also use systemics, but I don't encourage people to use systemics because I like to keep things, if I'm growing things in the garden, trying to keep those as clean as possible.
Sure.
you know, it's not listed, you know, 7, which has carbaryl in it. It's not listed as being effective on it, but I've heard some people say that it has been. So what you really want to do is make sure that you spray your plant well enough underneath, you know, because you got a canopy with all the foliage
right.
of your squashes and so forth, that you got to get it where it's on the stems. So as the larvae starts to work its way into the stem, you know, it's having to eat through that product, and therefore it dies.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have any problems. Another way that you can kind of protect yourself is try using some of the other products that are a little more friendlier, I should say,
right.
like spinosad or neem oil. But be careful when you're using neem oil, because when it's really hot, sometimes you can have some issues with neem oil, you know, with temperatures and phytotoxicity, where you will have a little discoloration or something that's not so good happen to the foliage. So you have to be careful with temperatures when you're using oils, especially things like neem oil or horticultural oils.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also take that approach. In addition to using row covers sometimes, to where, you know, you can put row covers that's it's very light in weight over top of your vines or your plants until the point where they start to open up or flower. And what you want to do at that point in time, when you start seeing the males and female flowers on your vines, is to remove the row cover so you can get pollination. So that's another approach to it. But they can be pretty pesky. And next year I'll make a little note that we'll talk about it prior to actually seeing the damage. And once we see the damage, unfortunately, it's a little too late.
Sure. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we have Jimmy on the line from Hamilton. Tony, he's got a knockout rose question for you. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Jimmy on the line from Hamilton, and he's got a question for you about his knockout roses. Jimmy, how old are the roses?
Let's see, probably 2 to 3 years old.
Okay.
What's going on? How are they looking right now?
They don't look good. I don't know if I've got a infestation of some type of insect, but they got holes in the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Some looks good, some looks bad.
Right.
So I'm not sure how to treat it or to get them back to normal.
Well, definitely the rose slug is what's plaguing you. And the rose slug, it's a real little green larvae that's maybe an eighth of an inch to a quarter of an inch in length. It's pretty small. You really have to look hard. And they hang out on the underneath side of the leaves on the rose bushes.
Okay.
But I have a remedy for you, so, you know, just hang on for a second. But these guys will have several generations throughout the course of a season. So for those people who are not treating your rose bushes, this is going to plague you all season long, and your rose bushes will just look downright ugly. It's not the demise of your rose bush, or it will not kill your rose bush, but it does stress them out. So what you can do is, you know, next spring, what I want you to do, are you pruning them back annually?
I'm sorry?
Jimmy, do you prune your rose bushes back once a year, annually?
I do. I usually do it in the fall. Is that wrong?
Well, that was the old approach, and that's, you know, some people still do that. I would rather see you prune those back late winter, early spring, sometime in March. Okay.
And how far do you go? I mean, I've heard you can't kill the knockout bush or knockout rose.
Well, you can, but they're pretty resilient. Just right. I want you to cut it back to around 10, 12 inches above the ground.
Oh, okay.
Okay? And at that point in time, I want you to do a couple of things. First and foremost, this is a good time frame to start getting into using the product that's going to keep the rose slug off of your rose bush. And that is the Fertilume Tree and Shrub Systemic Drench. Okay, and you can pick that up at any of your local garden centers and nurseries. It's going to protect your rose bushes for up to 1 year, and it does a phenomenal job. It really does.
Wow, okay.
And so the way you'll mix this product is you're going to use 3 ounces of the Fertilume Systemic Tree and Shrub Drench to 1 gallon of water per foot height of plant. Now, here's the important part, and I know this happens often. When homeowners cut their rose bushes back, they're around 12 inches, 10 to 12. They only use 3 ounces to a gallon of water. We need to anticipate what that rose bush is capable of growing to height-wise. So we know the knockout's going to get at least 3 feet, maybe 4. So therefore, I want you to use at least 9 ounces of the product to like about 2 gallons or so of water. Mix it thoroughly and pour it in slowly around the base of the shrub. And that shrub will take that product in a systemic fashion. And that means it will get up into the plant through the root system, and it will protect it all season long. So you won't see those holes. I guarantee you won't see those holes if you take that approach. And secondly, and most importantly as well, rose bushes throughout the spring and summer months are heavy feeders. You'll want to fertilize them once a month. And you call back, you follow up with us, and tell me if you do not notice a difference in the performance of your rose bush. I can guarantee you, you'll see a heck of a difference.
I definitely will. That's awesome. I appreciate it.
What garden center are you close to, Jimmy?
He's in Hamilton, so...
Oh, you could probably go up there to Lakeview. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jim Montag up at Lakeview Nurseries.
Right.
Okay?
Couldn't think of the name of it, but yes.
Tell him we said hello. He's a good
definitely
dude.
Will.
Yeah, right. Good guy. Okay, thanks. Jimmy, have a good weekend.
All right, you too. Thanks.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. And Tony, we have Dan on the line from Villa Hills. Got a peach tree question. Hi, Dan. What's going on with your peach trees?
Well, I've been back there for about 40 years, and I get peaches off of it every year.
Uh-huh.
This year, for some reason, I've got peaches everywhere. Branches are breaking off, and they're all undersized. I must have 1,000 of them on there this year. It's probably too late for this year, but what can I do about next year? I mean, the peaches are good, but they're all undersized.
Yeah.
Well, so I'm surprised you had an abundance of peaches, to be honest with
you. I got branches falling off of it. I got 50 of them just laying there on the ground.
Okay. Now, this is really important, and I got to ask you, are you pruning your peach tree every spring?
No, not at all.
Okay. That's the importance of pruning your peach tree. When we prune our fruit trees, what we're doing is a couple of things. We're thinning it out, and we're making that tree stronger so it can support its fruit production.
Okay.
So with the peach tree itself, what we want to do, we want to keep it in a vase-shaped kind of format. We want to keep it open. And when I say keep it open in the center, is pruning out everything that crosses in the center.
Okay.
Okay? And we want to prune this sometime, you know, late spring, not really late spring, but it's a tricky, you don't prune them back or prune them as early as you do apples.
Well, it'd be before or after I start getting the blossoms on it.
Before you start seeing it flush out is when I would prune it.
Okay.
And don't prune everything, be specific. And we'll have a show just that talks solely on pruning fruit trees at some point in time in February, early March. That's when we usually talk about pruning our fruit trees because that's the perfect time to do it. But when we do it, we're pruning it, you know, to keep it healthier and keep it stronger. In your situation right now, I would not be hesitant to prune some of those branches. Just be selective about it. Prune some of the stuff on the inner side so you can reduce that weight and keep that tree happy and healthy.
Okay.
And how old did you say that peach tree is?
I moved in here about 40 years ago, and we planted it, and we first... I think about 3 years where we got peaches off of it. We've been getting them every year.
Wow. That's phenomenal because typically peach trees aren't, to my knowledge, that long-lived.
Well, this one keeps regenerating itself. There's new growth on it coming out of the bottom every year.
Out of the bottom, okay. Now I wonder if it's reverted back. That's a good question, too, and I can't honestly answer that. If it's all coming up from the base,
yeah,
that might have something to do with what's happened in the size of the peach, too. Because you're saying they were abnormally small,
yeah.
Which could also be something else. You know, give John your information, and I'm going to check with David Kester on that. Do you ever do Facebook or take any photographs?
No, not at all.
Okay. Well, what I'll do, I'll touch base with you. Might be part of it, too. How tall is it right now?
Oh, man. 10 feet.
Okay. I'll follow up with you. That's very interesting. I just, the age of that really has, I'm surprised.
Well,
but I can see that it has, you know, a lot of times those trees are grafted. And depending upon how they're grafted, you know, we may be seeing another variety or variation of the peach, and that might be part of the undersized element. Was it undersized last year?
No, last year they were
perfect.
Perfect.
Okay. Well, I'll follow up with you nonetheless, okay?
Okay, is Ernie still there?
Yes.
Ernie, this is Dan O'Donnell.
Hey, senior, how are you?
All right. If you want to come over and look at that thing.
Okay, I will.
Taking a picture, it's there. I mean, I got peaches everywhere.
Okay. Well, then
we can do that.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. We'll just stop over sometime this weekend and have a little refreshment, and I'll take some pictures.
All right, sounds good.
All right, Dan.
All right,
thank you.
All right, see
you. Take it easy, brother. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we have Ed on the line from Batavia. He's got an apple tree that has holes in the leaves. We'll get that problem resolved, too. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And I seem to have lost my mind here. We're going to Jimmy in Hamilton. Hi, Jimmy, you there?
Yes.
Okay, Jim, Tony has knockout roses. He's got some issue with that. Go ahead, Jim.
Apple tree. No, that's an apple tree. Yeah, go ahead.
Hold on.
Jimmy was calling before.
And your name is Ed. Sorry about that.
He had a rough night. He's okay, though. He had a rough night.
So you have holes in your leaves of your apple trees.
Yes. I turned it back early spring.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is our church's apple tree. I've never really seen fruit on it. And, you know, they never really took care of it. I don't think anybody there really knew how to turn a tree.
Now, let me ask you this, Ed. Are there any other apple trees close to this tree?
No.
Okay.
No, it's a lone tree out in the middle of the yard.
Gotcha.
You know, it was kind of wiry. I went over there, I cleaned it up. You know, it started producing some fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And then the holes started showing up. And, I mean, the leaves are pretty much shot to where they can't, I guess, photosynthesize.
Right.
You know, whatever they need to do. So
right.
Season, it's not going to do anything.
Right.
There's box worms. I guess that's what they're called, is box worms on there now.
Okay.
So I don't know what I can do to help this tree for next year and prevent it from happening for next year.
Okay. Now, well, you know, a couple things here that's going to come into play. You only have one apple tree. I always suggest to homeowners, you know, try and plant two. You know, especially and you know, you have different types of apple trees. You have an early season, you know, early, mid, and late, and that dictates when they bloom. So you kind of want them to be in the same, you want them cycling together from a blooming standpoint, so you get that pollinization element about it.
Yeah.
So that's really, really important. And so I would do that, you know, sometime this fall, maybe get out to one of your local garden centers or nurseries and pick up another apple tree. And secondly, you know, don't do anything heroic right now. The tree is, no doubt about it, it's stressed. You know, without foliage, like you stated, you don't get that photosynthesis element about it where it can sustain itself and take care of itself. But what I would do later in the season, late fall, I would probably fertilize that tree. And that way, next spring, you know, as we go through the fall and winter months, we still get a lot of root development. So as we get moisture coupled with fertilization, you know, hopefully we get a stronger root system and we have a better, healthier apple tree next spring. Okay.
Yeah.
And then next spring, what I want you to do is, in relation to what it looks like, you know, you said it was kind of wiry, spindly looking, you know, is, you might do a little pruning and you may not. But what I want you to do is follow a spray kind of guide. You need to spray apple trees. And probably what's plagued you this season are a couple of things. You know, perhaps Japanese beetles or beetles. Did you have any of that type of activity?
I haven't physically seen any, but I've heard that they're out here.
Yeah. So typically you'll see that type of activity. You could spray 7. But I don't want you to spray that tree when it's in bloom. I want you to do those kind of things after that's all finished, okay?
Yeah.
And secondly, keep an eye on the caterpillars. I know a couple of weeks ago, someone had brought in a couple of branches into the garden center, and they were just literally chewed up. I mean, you know, unrecognizable, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it was the yellow-necked caterpillar, and they feast in groups. You know, they'll destroy crab apple trees, apple trees, and, you know, there's some other species of trees that they'll get on.
No, so, that what I'm seeing that I'm thinking is what people refer to as a box worm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But, you know, just keep an eye on that and have something on deck like 7 to spray with.
Yeah.
And I think you can keep a lot of those insect issues at bay.
Okay.
You know, I know it's not an organic approach. However, it's very beneficial. And with some of your caterpillars, too, you can also use spinosad, which is an organic way to go after it, or anything with BT, Bacillus thuringiensis. So those will be an organic approach to spraying for caterpillars. And see where that takes you. And get another apple tree and see where we go.
All right,
Ed. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Ed. 749-B105 in and around the house. With your local home and garden guys, we have Rick on the line. Rick is from Goshen. He's got a cedar tree problem, but he also has a question about his maple tree, Tony. So what's going on, Rick?
Hey, fellas, first of all, wealth of information that y'all share for free. It is fantastic for fellas like us out here in the fields.
Appreciate that.
So with that, I'll try to stay on point here.
Okay.
Yep, I got some cedar trees here. House built 1950. These are put in a 58. They're beautiful. But every other year, it seems I get a seed cluster on here. And this year, it had like a mucus type of growth over top of it. And the end result is I'm holding one here. It's hard as a rock. And if you break it open, it looks like I can't almost describe it, but it is almost like a seed pod. Is there a characteristic of them there, cedar trees, that cause this?
Go ahead.
No, I'll listen now, and I'll...
You're telling me, and I'll explain that seed pod situation again?
Yep. On here, these cedar trees, and I don't know what specific ones they are, but I can tell you they're 70 feet tall, and there's 7 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they, on the end of the branch, they will develop a seed pod.
Right.
And then there is a mucus type, like a membrane that grew on them this year that I've never seen before.
Kind of like an orangish color?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I know that it's a type of growth. And I think it's a fungus of some sort. It's like a rust.
Correct.
But typically, I don't know if there's really what's to be used from a treatment type of standpoint.
Well, with that, I will say that the one thing the old farmers told me is keep your apple trees and pear trees as far away from it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
There is a chemical reaction between them by nature.
Right, exactly.
So here's the last thing I do know. My missus from good woman down there in Jellico, Tennessee, they say that this is what our forebears here would keep these, because once they get to ambering, they will stay burning. That's just old folklore. I've used it in the mountains myself because I go on walkabouts. So with that answered the first one. Now here's the other one. Are you familiar with a tree called leatherwood?
I've heard of leatherwood.
I have probably 6 to 8 of them growing out in the back field that I do not maintain. I let my property go wild every 3 years. All organic up here on the hill.
Uh-huh.
Now, one of the fellows in the extension office was out doing the walkabout here with me, looking at things, and he said they were just very rare. Got any information on them other than it's an oddity?
No, it's not one. They usually call them like an eastern leatherwood. It's the kind of like a round-shaped leaf on it.
The foliage I can't identify as much because the
right.
There isn't a typical bark. It's just so unique. It looks like almost an elephant's leg.
Mm-hmm.
Hard as a rock. Very hard.
Is it more like a, is it more shrub shaped?
Oh, no, these trees.
These are trees. Okay.
Yeah, they get about, I guess they're about 15 feet tall.
15?
But they're in an overgrown area of sweet maples.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't get a lot of sun. Like I said, I leave three quarters of my land for the critters here because too much development.
Sure,
that's
right.
Just my personal stance. I can grow more than enough food for my family on the land that I have. But, okay, you've answered that part of it. Here's the other one, and it's very important. If you've ever driven down south, you see what happened on the Jellicoe Mountain with that dang beetle. It just destroyed and they cleared that whole mountainside. 2 weeks ago, you talked about treatment of our maples to protect them. And once again, I am blessed to have such beautiful trees.
Mm-hmm.
I do not like chemicals.
Right.
But if it's a situation, now, what they try to do down in Tennessee, they mix up a little mixture of, I don't know, they mix up a little bit of kerosene with old transmission fluid, and they spray all around the base of the tree and then up about 5 feet high.
Never heard of that, really.
Yep.
That would be concerning to me, but go ahead.
It would, me too.
Mm-hmm.
So, what I wanted to ask was this.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you guys are so gracious. You always mention other people. You never mention how we can come see you. I know you said Facebook page, but I ain't no computer fellow.
Understand.
But will you recommend a true arborist? Because I don't want, we've had some of these here, people come up here from Duke.
Mm-hmm.
And they butchered the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And just being a good old country boy, I told them we're going to have a 911 moment if they don't stop cutting all my trees. So I refused access.
Right.
Just me. So I would like to know, would you recommend a couple true arborists in our whatever area that they're willing to come out here? And about that longhorn beetle, because if we do not take action against it, we will lose the foliage. We lose the foliage. We lose the air scrubber, if you will. Mm. That's what I call it.
Yeah, it's interesting. So you're talking about the ALB, the Asian longhorn beetle.
Yes, sir.
And we'll continue this. Hang on for a moment, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And when we come back out of the break, we'll continue this, and I'll give you a couple recommendations for ISA arborists that I would recommend that you maybe get in contact with.
I'd much appreciate it.
We need to pause for a moment. In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We've been talking with Rick from Goshen, who's had a couple of tree questions, and right now we're talking about the possibility of saving some maples on his property. Thanks for hanging on, Rick.
That's all right, dear.
Good. Hey, Rick, do you have a pencil handy real quick?
I sure do. I'm okay. Sitting here ready for you.
You got it. I would, Gregory Forrest Lester.
I'm familiar with that name.
Okay, and that phone number is
513-351-6100. Gotcha.
Dave Stang.
Stang.
513-936-9777.
Yes, sir.
And Madison Tree Care, 513-576-6391.
Last four digits, please.
6391.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Or Tim Back. So any one of those four guys, give them a call and, you know, get a couple of opinions and follow up with us, would you please?
Now, did you get a number on Beck there?
Yeah, 513-742-8733.
All right. Now, sure. I just want to tell you that through listening to y'all, and again, dealing with our Ohio State Extension office in Owensville, wealth of information. And again, for all those folks out there, your trees are what lets your children breathe in the future. And this invasion of this beetle is detrimental to that. Take it seriously. That's just my opinion.
Oh, yeah. Trees are important. But give those guys a call and follow up with us, will you please?
I sure will.
All right. You have a great weekend. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Several ways to stay connected with us. Jump onto our Facebook page. You can also email us at inandaroundthehouse@b105.com. And Rick's got some real good observations there and some genuine concerns about the trees.
Yeah, and, you know, the cedar apple rush, you'll see that often, just like he stated, you know, you can't have it without other trees, you know, being in the vicinity, so to speak, you know, the apple trees and so forth and the cedars. So that typically happens. It's nothing that's going to be detrimental by any means.
Sure.
Especially trees. I'm sure there's trees that's happened to them before in the past. But the one that was interesting was the leatherwood, which I'm not that familiar with it at all. Mm-hmm. I've heard of it. That's one I'm going to kind of look into. But I like that kind of stuff. You know, you learn something every day, and this whole program is built upon, you know, all of our nurseries here locally in the tri-state area and garden centers and listeners like Rick. And everyone's welcome to share information along with one another. And I always look at it like this, Ernie. Every day is a school day, is it not? Always somebody knows something that you don't. So you look at it like that, you'll fare well.
I'm just waiting for the call to lunch.
There you go.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. And we do need to pause for a moment to get caught back up. And when we come back,
let's talk about the plant of the week. You know, we're right there, and this thing's in full bloom, and she's a beauty.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've had a flurry of activity here off the phone line. We absolutely love it. And Tony, we have Laura on the line from Indiana. And she has a bush that's half dead and the other half, I guess, is doing well. What kind of bush is it, Laura?
Hello. I looked it up and I might not be saying this correctly, but it said Gold Mount Spirea.
A wisteria?
Spirea.
Okay.
Oh, Spirea.
Okay. That's right.
Gold Mount Spirea. Okay.
It's big. It's about, I don't know, 4 feet wide and 2 foot tall. So I guess it's about full grown. Half of it, it has some new growth on the outside of the tree, but the whole inside of the tree looks like it's dying.
Mm-hmm.
And the other half of the tree is fine.
Right. They can get a little ratty looking. And you're experiencing that, obviously. Have you ever pruned it back?
I haven't. I've lived there about 2.5 years, and I haven't touched it.
What I would do, let it run its course right now, and then next year, like late winter, early spring, I would prune it back pretty heavily. I'd go into it hard and see how it responds. And if it doesn't respond favorably, lift it and plant another one in its place or something else. Sometimes spireas can look really, really nice, or they can really look awful.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, I know it's serious for you, but it's pretty typical. And just approach it as such. You know, don't be afraid to cut into it. A lot of times, too, you'll see that, and that's because it's not been pruned and kept in check, that you're seeing, you know, a lot of dead down inside or, you know, no foliage at all. Is it out in the open, or is it close to other shrubs?
It's in a flower bed, and it's in a corner, kind of in between the deck and the house.
Okay. How much sun is it getting?
It gets part sun, so it gets the afternoon sun.
Yeah. You know, and a lot of times it could be that environment. You said it's in a corner, and a lot of times if you're not getting good air movement around shrubs, they go left unchecked for a number of years. You know, you'll start seeing a lot of different and weird behavior, you know, and that's exactly what you're seeing right now. But as long as you're getting at least 6 hours of sun on it, is it blooming for you in the spring?
Yes.
Yeah. And when you cut it back next year, you know, just don't be afraid to do it. And what we're trying to do is rejuvenate this particular shrub. And at that point in time, I'd fertilize it, and let's just see what happens.
When should I prune it?
I prune it like late winter, early spring, right before it starts to flush out. And then when I would probably do that sometime in March, given, you know, the weather's permissible. So okay. what I'm trying to get you to do is prune it as it starts to re-energize and all of its new, you know, the phloem, everything's going up into the shrub and we can put some new growth on it. I don't want you to do it now because if we turn hot again, it stresses things out.
I understand. Now, I have a couple of the other, the same bush in my yard and they're smaller.
Mm-hmm.
When should I prune them?
Do they look nice?
Yeah, those look nice. I have three that are newer. I planted last year, and then I have another one in the front yard that's big.
I always prune them in the spring.
Okay.
I don't really put a lot of emphasis on, you know, the bloom of some spireas. You know, with gold mounds, you're going more for the foliage color. You know, you get that chartreuse green color in the gold mounds. So
yeah.
Really, primarily, that's what we're going for is that foliage color. And just keep them in check. And usually when
okay.
you keep them in check, like you do rose bushes, they respond favorably.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't some kind of disease or something on it.
No, not usually. You know, you might have some mildew or what have you, like the one that's in the corner.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why it's important that we keep a lot of air movement or potential air movement around our shrubs when we plant things around the home. Because that all comes into play. Don't water on top either when you water. You know, don't get the foliage wet at night, stuff like that. You know, you're keeping diseases at bay. Just always water down low near the soil surface.
Oh, all right. Good to know.
And, you know, real quick, if you ever, if you like spireas, one of my favorites, and I love this particular spirea, it's a newer one. It's supposed to be, the whole series is, they're better performers, is the Double Play series. And one called Artist. I love the foliage on that. It's beautiful. So look for that at one of your local garden centers. Are you over in Indiana?
I am, yes.
Who are you close to?
Well, Mingus's is not, well,
yeah.
I used to be Mingus's, not that far.
Well, stop.
I'm in Brookville.
Yeah, stop there or McCabe's, you know, but look for some of the Double Play series. I like the Double Play, especially Artist.
Okay. Okay. All right, I'll look into that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a good weekend.
You too.
749 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And been pretty busy, pretty hectic.
Oh, yeah, the good old spirea.
We have beautiful weather today and tomorrow. And this is going to be the perfect weekend for you to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center. Start looking ahead. Not that we're wanting to rush out of the summer season, but we do want you to be aware that some of the new product is going to be making its way in. And if you're struggling with some lawn issues, we've been talking a little bit about that this morning. Going to carry on some more of that conversation. But we do need to pause when we come back.
We're going to hit up on our plan of the week, and it is the crepe myrtle. So hang in there with us. 749-B105, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Carla on the line from Loveland with the question. She has ants taking over her plants.
Mm.
Are they big black ants? Are they red ants? Or
No, they're a little small, kind of brown. But
mm-hmm.
they basically take the whole base of the plant and kill it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've dug it out, but they come right back. And
right.
I mean, it's like a foot radius in the plant that they've taken a nest in.
Right. So part of the nest is underground within the root structure, perhaps?
Could be.
Yeah. That's not always good. So what typically happens there is that around the root structure, you start having these ant colonies underneath the plant itself. It starts creating voids. So, you know, they're moving soil around. They're creating those voids, those cavities, the colonies. And then all of a sudden, there really isn't anything for those root structures to latch to or pull moisture from, even get nutrients from. And with that void underground, sometimes, you know, if the activity is so bad, you know, it could be the demise of that plant or really stress that plant out. What type of shrub or plant is this?
This is a like a snowdrop, but I've had the same thing with a blue star juniper before.
Right.
And I was able to save the blue star juniper, but this is a little more fragile plant, and
mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to make it.
When you say snowdrop, are you talking about like the bulb or the what comes up in the spring that should
yeah.
already
No, it's a, well, maybe that's not the name of it. It's a green plant, but it gets a white flower early spring.
A viburnum, perhaps? Okay.
It's real low growing.
It's low growing. Maybe a deutzia. Okay. Well, what I would do, where I would go with this, I would get out to one of your local garden centers and nurseries. Have you used any products that you can sprinkle on top of the mulch or around the plant itself and activate it with water?
Not preen, but a commercial grade of preen. Treflan or...
Yeah, now that's really more for weed prevention.
Okay.
So that's nothing in that that really gives you any type of insect control.
I've got malathion. Would that...
You could spray malathion around. I'm sure that that would be effective to a degree. But what I would really do is this. You know, because when you spray a liquid and you get a rain, it could dissipate. It could break that down quicker. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you were to use something from a granular standpoint, for example, I tell you what, I've used High Yield as the manufacturer, Turf Ranger. It's called Turf Ranger Insect Control. And it comes in about a 10-pound bag. And you can also get it in a 20-pound bag. And spread this on top of your mulch and in those areas that you're being plagued or, you know, that are affected with a lot of ant activity. And moisten the product down, and you'll find that it's very, very effective for insect control. And it's not only just for ants. Go ahead.
I was going to say, will it work with ticks?
I'd have to look into that. I know that, like crickets and fleas and stuff like that. I'm not sure about ticks. I would have to look into that. Do you have some issues with ticks?
Yeah, we have this year really bad, on my dog. Well, and on myself.
On yourself?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I'll be out watering and I came in the other night and had one in my head.
Wow.
Yeah, you definitely have to be careful there, that's for sure. But I'd have to check into the tick thing. I'm not really, really sure about ticks. I know that you may try 38 plus may be beneficial for ticks. I'll check into that. I don't know. I don't want to comment on the Turf Ranger and say that it does control ticks. It might.
Well, right now, that's my biggest issue is
the ants, right? Okay.
Yeah.
I know it works effectively with ants. I can tell you that firsthand. And then I'll check and see if ticks are listed on that label. All right?
All right.
What garden center are you close to?
Well, I've got Beck's Hardware out there carries some of the products you talk about.
High Yield? Okay.
Yeah. I'm not too far from Round Bottom Road, so...
Yeah, there's a lot of places over there, too. You you might try Bezax. You might try... Oh, go over to Burger Farm. I know.
Yeah.
Go over and see Bart. Farm. Yeah, go see Burger Farm. I know they carry a lot of high-yield products. And ask for Ken or Bart.
Okay.
And look for the Turf Ranger. And the next time we go into a break, I want to check the label on it and see if ticks are listed. And... keep listening because I'll tell you which one of those will work for you for ticks.
All right.
Thank you. All right, Laura, thanks for the call. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're going to talk about
the plant.
Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, in and around the house, is ready with your plant of the week.
It is a regular feature here at In and Around the House, a chance for us to highlight something that just might bedazzle you in your landscape.
And I'll tell you what's really giving us a burst of color right now. If you haven't noticed, you should. Keep your eyes out. It's the crepe myrtle.
Beautiful plant.
Oh, I love the crepe myrtle. And a couple of things about the crepe myrtle that we'll get into here in just a moment. But first and foremost... those of us who have crepe myrtles or have seen crepe myrtles, we know this time of year, they give us just a bounty of color.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's there. It's beautiful. It's stunning. And you know, there's various types of crepe myrtles that are out there. But just from a usage standpoint with crepe myrtles, it's great if you use it as a specimen shrub. And when we talk about something being a specimen in a landscape, what we mean is a shrub or a plant that's a standalone.
It's by itself. It's not mixed in with anything. It's not in a grouping of any sort. But sometimes just as a standalone, the crepe myrtle can just be stunning.
Yeah.
Or you could also plant a grouping of crepe myrtles, you know, in a grouping. You get all that color. It's a mass of color, and it just really stands out. It's like a drift. It's like a sea of color. And right now, and they bloom for the longest time. You know, they bloom for a long time. They can also, in some situations, serve as a screen. Not as much up here where we are in the northern part of the states as you'll see them when you go south. And that's what else I want to draw attention to, is that we're about as far north as you want to bring a crepe myrtle. We're right on the cusp. We're right on the envelope, you know. Just how hardy is that crepe myrtle? Most crepe myrtles are hardy to a zone 6. Most are 7s, 8s. And that's why when you're down south, you're in Tennessee, you're in Georgia, they're beautiful. Mm-hmm. Florida, they're beautiful. And in those areas, they have the luxury of seeing those get taller and actually becoming small trees. In our area, I've planted it, the crepe myrtle, before in a tree form. And if you go on our Facebook page, I don't know if you particularly paid any attention to the one, Ernie, that I posted that's in my landscape.
I did.
That is called Sarah's Favorite. It's white. And there's a little story behind Sarah's Favorite, the one that's in my landscape. And where I'm headed with this is the true hardiness of our crepe myrtles. We're about as far north as you want to bring them.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what typically happens. If the winter here, if it's severe enough, it's going to knock them back. And it did mine. You know, remember that bad winter we had back in 2012?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, that's not going to happen again.
Sure.
Not back to back. I mean, a baseball player, you go up to the plate, how often you hit back-to-back home runs? Not often.
No.
So I planted Sarah's Favorite, and it was a tree form, and it was beautiful. Four big, nice trunks coming out of the ground. It was about 7-8 feet. Lo and behold, the winter wasn't that kind to me, and it died back to the ground. I was fortunate enough. Now, this is where all this comes into play. I was very fortunate that I had planted it earlier in the season, and I am not encouraging you to go out and purchase one now. You may get away with planting one right now, but if you put it off a little bit later, you're playing Russian roulette, because we need to allow them to get rooted in, and they're better suited to be planted earlier in the season versus later.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you couldn't pull it off, and I'm not trying to discourage you if you were to find one, not to give it a whirl, but they like to be planted in an area where they're somewhat protected. And doing so is going to benefit you in a big way. Now, when mine died back to the ground, you know, I was still, you know, I was a little speculative about, you know, is it going to make it? Is it not?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I knew that going into it. And that's what's important. That's why a lot of us who sell crepe myrtles in the garden center, unfortunately, it's not one of those that we guarantee. There's just too many variables that come into play. And really, I want to say this from a business standpoint, it's hard to guarantee that to the customer, because we're doing our best to bring you something unique and different up into our area that we know could be suspect. So you got to take some of the risk as well as a homeowner when you buy the crepe myrtle. But once they get rooted in and you lose one like I did the first season, they die back to the ground typically. And those who experience this know exactly what I'm talking about. They will respond back in time. They're not the quickest to start to flush out and green up in the spring like some of our other shrubs that we're so familiar with. But you have to be patient with the crepe myrtle. Mine has come back favorably, like other people who experience that same situation, and it's beautiful. And you'll see a lot of those out there that are red. You'll see those that have a little bit of a lavender color to them. You'll see those that are white, like mine. At the time when I had mine, we sold the ones that had the most amount of color, the red and the lavender. So I thought, I'm going to take you home, buddy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I planted her. So all is well. And it just the bloom time that you get from the crepe myrtle right now, they are in their glory. midsummer all the way, you know, towards the end of summer going into fall, you'll see beautiful blooms throughout with the crepe myrtle.
I was I'm going to ask you, you were mentioning about them being different type plants down south. Are they larger down there than they are here? As you said, tree form.
Yeah, because of the weather, you know, when you go south, you push south of here, the winters aren't as severe as what we typically average here. And, you know, just like if we push forward and go up into the Cleveland area or Wisconsin, so to speak,
right,
the winters up there are a lot more brutal than where they are here in the Cincinnati area. The same kind of works and applies south of us. But in the south, like in Georgia, when I was at the Atlanta airport a couple weeks ago, beautiful crepe myrtles. They were tree form. They were probably 15 feet, give or take. And the bark on the crepe myrtle is very interesting as well. And mine in particular, it's called Sarah's Favorite. It's a white bloom, which I'm okay with white blooms. You know, we all like different colors. But Sarah's Favorite has beautiful burgundy fall foliage in the fall. And also the bark has a cinnamon color to it. So I'm getting some winter interest from Sarah's Favorite. So if you're on Facebook page, check it out. I posted pictures of it. And I just thought the other day when I was admiring my crepe myrtle, I thought, you know, this is a plant we need to touch base on.
Sure.
And when we come back out of the break, excuse me, I'll tell you a couple of my favorites and what to look for. And when you're out at your local garden centers and nurseries, if there's something in stock, you might want to pick it up or think about this next year and see if they can get it in for you. 749-B105, Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. We'll be right back.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We were talking a little bit about our plant of the week before we went into the break. It was the crepe myrtle. And what are some of your faves?
Well, obviously, I was talking a lot about Sarah's Favorite, which is in my landscape. And also, I posted some photographs of it here on Facebook. If you're looking for something red from a, you know, when you're looking at crepe myrtles, Dynamite is one that I would seriously consider. And most of your crepe myrtles that we're talking about, you know, they can become like taller shrubs or small trees. And they're going to be around 10 feet, give or take. It just varies. And so I would consider Dynamite would be one. Another red that I really think highly of is called Red Rocket. That's another nice, showy red blooming crepe myrtle. If you're looking for something like in the pink colors, Hopi would be one that you might want to consider. And I think the other one that it's more of a lavender is Zuni. And that's another good one as well. So just look for some of those and see what's available out there at your local garden centers and nurseries. There's also one that I'm trying to think if it had a different color to it. It's called Raspberry Sundae, which I've seen before. Kind of has a red color to it with a white margin. I've not seen that one in a while, and it still might be available. So I'm trying to remember when I last saw that. There used to be a couple smaller varieties, Ernie, that were in a certain type of series. And I'm going to go back a couple of years, and I don't know if they're still available or not. I don't always bring in a lot of crepe myrtles.
Right.
But these were more low-growing, and it was the Razzle Dazzle series. And they would get about 2 to 3 foot. And one of my dad's neighbors had this particular variety, and it had really it has done remarkably well over the years. But unfortunately, I've not paid attention to it in recent years to see if it's still there. But the Razzle Dazzle was really interesting. And there was a few years ago that there was another small growing crepe myrtle that was available. It was in the Philly series. And those were a little bit smaller, almost like you could plant a bunch of those and they would have a ground cover effect to them. And they would only get about 1 to 1.5 feet in height. And the Philly series, I'm not even sure if that's still available, but I remember those being a lot smaller than the typical crepe myrtles that we'll find in the garden centers.
Right.
But keep in mind, take on a little bit of the risk yourself and step out there. And if you run into a crepe myrtle, definitely pick one up, plant it in a protected area around your home. It will benefit hugely being protected a little bit.
And I think you'll be one happy camper. Give it a whirl.
Speaking of crepe myrtles, Tony, we have Nikki on the line from Goshen.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a crepe myrtle, and it's coming back from the grave, I guess. What should she do next? Is that right, Nikki?
That is correct.
Okay, so what kind of crepe myrtle is it, do you know?
It was actually a razzle-dazzle.
A razzle-dazzle.
So that was like a low-growing variety that we were just talking about.
Correct.
Yes.
I got it for a present, and it died a couple years ago, I thought, due to the winter. And and then this spring, I planted my bulbs, my canna bulbs, and between them, up popped my crepe myrtle again. So, you know, I don't want to lose it, but I want to transplant it to put it, you know, as the, you know, lone point in the front of my yard. So,
you want to move it to a new location, correct?
Right. Should I wait till the spring to do it?
I would, because one, if we disturb it now, how tall has it grown back to? Did it die back to the ground completely?
Completely. I thought it was gone.
And we all think that.
It was just dirt, and that's, I just, and then now the canna bulbs are kind of around it, but it's it's about a foot and a half now. It's not bloomed, but I'm going to hold out hope that I'll get it back next year.
See what happens. How much sun are you getting in that area? Quite a bit?
Quite a bit. Probably half the day.
Yeah.
It's on my sunny side of the house.
Right. What I would encourage you to do, if it sounds like we need to move it, do not do it now because we don't want to disturb it. Is it nice and green? The foliage look lush on it?
Yes.
Okay.
It's beautiful.
That's good. And what happens sometimes with crepe myrtles, if we lose them back to the ground, some are more temperamental than others, you know, it takes them a long time to come back on because they're one of the last to flush out. And then as they start coming on, we need a longer, warmer growing season so we can get that bloom. So hopefully you'll see some bloom later. And if you do, please call us. I'm curious what's going to happen with it.
Right.
Now, the best time to move it, I would say when you start to see it flushing out next spring.
Okay.
That way, you know where it is. As if it dies back again, you'll know where it is. And then get as much of the root structure as you can, lift it, and have the new home prepped and ready to go.
Okay, great.
And that way it can get rooted in. And what else I want you to do, most importantly, get out to one of your local garden centers or nurseries and pick up one of two products, one being a root stimulator from Fertilume or another product that I like a lot when I'm trying to get things to root better, and it's called Mycorrhiza, but it's in a product called Biotone.
Okay.
From Espoma. One of those two will be adequate, and that will help that root development. And trying to move it now at this time, and if it gets stressed, it may not make it.
Right, and I didn't want to do that. So I was going to leave it to the spring, and then I heard you talking about them. I just adored them, and I knew it was kind of iffy just where we're at.
Right.
But I'm just so happy that it came back.
Yeah, awesome. You know, keep us in the loop, and that's what it's about. You know, it's that... You're on, you know, you're just out there, you're on pins and needles thinking, is it coming, is it coming, is it coming, and there it is.
Yeah.
But, all right.
Take some pictures and post them on our
page.
We'd like to see.
Okay, will do. Thank you.
Thank you. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden. Guys, we need to pause for a moment. And Tony, when we come back, we have Sandy hanging on the line. She's got a question about growing sweet melons via seeds in a container. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Sandy on the line from Erlanger. He's got an interesting question about growing sweet melon from seeds that have been discarded. Sandy, tell us that story.
I bought some sweet melon at the store, and I was cleaning out the seeds, and I thought, you know what? I want to see if I could grow one.
Right.
So I took all the seeds, I cleaned it out of the sweet melon, threw them in a container, threw some dirt in there, and my God, you ought to see it. It's just bloom. It's busting out with these green leaves. So did I grow anything or not?
Let it go. Is it vining out? How far out is it vined? Are you still there? You're kind of breaking up. This is kind of fun when you do things of the sort. And here's what else I want to point out. whenever you do that, you know, you something you buy at the grocery store, or, you know, maybe something that someone has given you, or something maybe that you've grown yourself, typically, you know, so, most of what we have today have been hybridized, and not everything. You know, that's when we talk about heirlooms and hybridized types of varieties of fruits and vegetables. So a lot of times, if it's a hybridized plant that we're talking about, the seed that you put into a container and covered with soil, a lot of times you don't always necessarily get that same plant the following season. It could very easily revert back to one of the original parents.
Oh, wow. Huh.
So really, it's a wait-and-see game, and get it as much sun as you possibly can. And if we are lucky enough to have pollination and everything go the way it's supposed to, see what you end up with. So it's kind of going to be a surprise for you.
Well, if anything grows, will it be on top or just melon grow in the ground?
It'll be on top.
Uh-huh.
And, okay. How large are the plants, or is the plant?
You know, I got it in a medium-sized container, mm-hmm. and the leaves are just up high and over the side.
Container. Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. You might want to transplant that into something larger, because they can get quite large.
Oh, can they? Okay.
Yeah. You know, give it a little bit of fertilizer, you know, and keep it evenly moist when necessary, and see what happens.
I've been watering it like crazy with this hot weather we're having, and it seems like it likes it, because it's really... I go out every day. It seems like it's gotten bigger.
Well, it's like Jack and the Beanstalk right there.
Yep. Right.
Stay the course. Have fun and enjoy. And you know, follow up with us, will you, please?
Yeah, I sure will.
Okay, see what happens. Thanks. Hopefully you get something.
Thank you much.
Uh-huh. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
749-V105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Jason on the line from Lawrenceburg,
mm-hmm.
who has got an ash tree, and he's worried about losing it to the emerald ash borer.
Most definitely.
Jason, how old's the tree?
Well, the house was built in 1951, so the trees have been there since then.
Mm-hmm. Of size. Okay. How are they looking now? What's the overall health, if you were to assess it?
We just cut one tree down, and it was totally dead.
Right.
And the other trees, it seems like half of the tree is growing.
Right.
And half's not.
Yeah.
Mm.
Any other trees? Any other ash trees besides the one that's like half and half?
The bottom part of the trees, mm-hmm. all the branches are dying, but the top is growing.
Okay. And
they have tons of holes in them.
Yeah, they're kind of D-shaped, if you look at the holes. And mm-hmm. Those are the exit holes, you know, when the beetle emerges from underneath the bark.
Okay.
You could probably rest assured that they're pretty littered with AL, or not ALB, with EAB, emerald ash borer. And I would have somebody take a look at those, a certified arborist, and just see where they stand. Now, here's the thing I want to tell all homeowners is this. You know, when you talk to a certified arborist, you know, they need to be concise, and they need to come clean and tell homeowners, that tree's too far gone, or I think that I can really help you. That's important, because you don't want to throw good money at bad.
You know,
right. But I will say this as well to everyone that has an ash tree and it's in good shape. Continue the course to protect that ash tree, because, one, if it's of size, it's a couple things are going to come into play. One, the cost of removing it. That's huge. Secondly, you'll never get a tree of that size that quick in replacement to that tree that you lost.
Right.
Okay? And, you know, and another important factor is large trees are such a huge benefit. And if they're up close to the house or near the house where they sometimes shade it, which helps keep your utility bill a little less or lower, you know, so there's so many values to trees. It's cheaper to treat one than it is to do all of that and take it out. But have you worked with any arborists by chance?
No, it's actually my grandma's house.
Yeah.
And, she's just the one tree was dying. It was dead. So
right.
We just had it cut down
right.
A couple weeks ago, And I said, well, Grandma, I'll go and I'll see if we can get some spray to just spray on them and treat them. Maybe it'll keep the trees longer.
You can treat them. Now, here's what really comes into play, and I'm going to try and, you know, go over this rather quickly, is that when you look at a tree and you measure its circumference, its diameter, or breast height, if it exceeds 28 inches, you should have it professionally treated and injected. If the diameter of breast height is less than that, then you could use any of the products that contain imidacloprid and pour it in around the base. Now, the best time to do that is early in the spring. Not that it wouldn't even gain any benefit if you were to do it now, but in your particular case, I would suggest you contact an arborist, especially if the tree's up close to the house and it's half of it's dead and half of it's alive, because you certainly don't want any storms coming through the area and breaking branches and you know, damage coming about as a result of, you know, something falling onto the house or something on the car. So definitely have it looked at. What did it cost you to have it removed, if you don't mind me asking?
Actually, my cousin did it, and he did it. He did it for $400.
Yeah, that's a couple treatments, you know. So if it's worth treating, do it. If it's not, then drop back and punt and come back with some other approach and a different tree.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have a couple of Facebook questions. We were talking about crepe myrtles early. Jane Bay had posted a couple of questions. How much sun does a crepe myrtle need?
Mm-hmm.
And also, what's a good time to prune them back to get a little more or a little rounder shape to them?
Great questions. Sun, I would want at least 6 hours of sun on my crepe myrtle a day to get that bloom production. And as far as pruning is concerned, you know, the beauty of the crepe myrtle is it will bloom on new growth, new wood. You remember we were talking to the one girl, the gal over, I think it was Indiana, about the gold mound spirea?
Yes.
We're talking about rejuvenating it and pruning it. You know, I had gone ahead and told her to do that like late winter, early spring as it's starting to flush out.
Right.
But she's going to forego some bloom. And I know that. But I told her that spirea, because of the color, we're going for the foliage look.
Sure.
So I would not be hesitant to cut something back like the spirea at that given point in time just to see if I can rejuvenate it. Now, so that's a spring blooming shrub. And the reason why I want to bring that up, and I'm glad that you did, is that our spring blooming shrubs, we really don't want to prune at this time of year.
No.
They're starting to set up for the show next year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, going back and talking about the crepe myrtle, the beauty of it is, just as we said before, that if they do die back to the ground, they rejuvenate and they may bloom again that season or maybe the next, but, you know, they bloom on new growth. So that's the beauty of pruning this back late winter, early spring. And I would do it before it actually starts to flush out and shape the tree and prune back anything, especially branches that cross in the center.
Mm-hmm.
I always want to open up a shrub to get good air movement within to help keep diseases at bay. And that's how I would approach that.
Sure.
And when you prune your crepe myrtle, it's a good thing to do. Don't butcher it and hack it. Prune it in a diligent format or fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're doing is you're helping it create more bloom power for you.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. But one more question from Facebook before we go into the break.
Yeah.
Comes from Catherine Reynolds. She wants to know, is it too late this season to plant hydrangeas?
Not at all.
You can still plant.
Nope. And get out to your local garden centers and nurseries, Catherine, and see what's available. And you're going to see there's probably still some macrophyllas out there. Those are the types that we typically see where it's either a pink bloom or a blue bloom.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the paniculatas, you know, they're still looking good, like a little quick fire, Bobo, for example, little lime, limelights. So certainly plenty of time to go ahead and plant and just take advantage of it. Hopefully we have a wonderful fall, too.
Gotcha. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Dave on the line from Hamilton. We're going to come to when we come back out of the break. Tony, he has two trees, and they're tilting just a little bit. We'll find out what's going on with those. When we come back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, we need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Dave on the line from Hamilton. He's got a couple of trees, and they're tilting a little bit, wants to know how to fix them. Hey, Dave, thanks for hanging on.
No problem.
So what kind of trees are they?
She was told what kind of trees they were.
Okay.
I just know that it's a flower that closes at night, and it blooms out real big in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever, and I have a white one, and I also have a pink one.
It's a tree, or it's a vining type of plant that is grown upward?
It's a tree.
So does the bloom you're talking about, does that only occur during the spring?
I think it is, or whatever. It's just leaning real bad, and it's right in the way when I get ready to cut the grass.
Right.
And I was wanting to know if I could prune that back.
Quick question. Let's talk a little bit about the size of the tree, and in particular, the trunk of the tree. Can you give me an idea of the circumference or the diameter of the trunk of the tree?
I'm going to say it's at least, probably 3 or 4 inches round.
Okay. If you were, now that's still not too bad, and give me another, is it near the house, or is it out away from the home?
There's one near the house, and there's one in the, towards the backyard, towards the fence.
Okay. Whatever.
The one that's towards the house is the one that's leaning real, real bad towards the yard.
Okay. What it's trying to do is get more light. And because the side of that particular tree that we're talking about that's close to the house, there's not enough light, and that's natural. That's to be expected. And you'll see a lot of that just even on the hillsides as you drive throughout the tri-state area where trees are competing against one another for light.
Uh-huh.
And they'll stretch to wherever they can get the most amount of light possible. You can prune that, but I don't really think that's going to buy you a great deal of anything. Just from the standpoint that it's going to continue to do it.
Yeah.
And that's pretty natural. In respect to something that might be a little more suitable, that's not as apt to require as much sun as this particular tree that we're talking about. So you could prune it to shape it up a little bit. I think in the long run, you're going to still see it do the same thing.
Okay, what about taking a ratchet strap and putting on it and trying to pull it back?
You can certainly do that. And, trying to get that tree trained while you can still do it where the diameter of the trunk is not as large will be to your benefit. Because the larger that trunk is, the more difficult it is to try and get it to stay in a certain shape. So you can certainly do that. And I'm taking it the one that's in the backyard close to the fence is doing the same thing.
It ain't near as bad.
Right.
But whatever is the one that is close to the house.
Right. Yeah. Unfortunately, that's your only recourse is to try and take that approach. And nothing wrong with it. It's just it sounds to me like they're too close to the house and too close to the fence.
Yeah.
For the type species of plant that it is.
Okay. I have one other question.
Sure.
Okay. Grubs.
Uh-huh.
Are they bad this time of year?
Mm. Well, what's probably happening underground right now, the larvae that were, the eggs that were laid by the Japanese beetles, they're starting to, feed on the roots of our turf. And we typically do not see that damage until sometime in September going into October.
Okay, I got some brown spots, and I got a feeling that's what it is it's grubs.
It could be. What I would encourage you to do is to take a flat shovel or a bullnose shovel, just go down a few inches and scrape back and peel that back, and if you have more than several in a given square foot area, then you have a grub problem.
Okay.
And at that particular point, what I would do is you still might get away with using a product that has imidacloprid in it, which is a systemic that's in grub-free zone from high yield. Or I would look for a grub product that contains Dilox, which once you put that down and you water it, it has a faster, it's faster at killing them at a given point in time. That's more of a reactive approach. So I would look for. Go ahead.
I live in a historical district. Is mm-hmm. where I live at.
Mm-hmm.
And my yard's real. I mean, it's like a golf course.
Well, there you go.
I'm just starting to see brown spots here and there in the yard, and I just put weed feed on it.
Well, you could have burned something too.
Okay.
So keep that in mind as well. And also, you know, it's not something that I would encourage people to do is fertilize your lawn at this time of year. We're almost to the point you want to start that first fertilization in September, and then the next one in the middle of November, and then once in the spring.
Okay.
All right.
No problem.
Good luck with the tree. Thanks for listening and for the phone call.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. And Tony, we have Marianne on the line from Crescent Spring. She has dismissed her lawn care company and wants to start taking care of her lawn herself and wants to know where to start. Hi, Mary.
Hi, how you doing?
Wonderful, thank you. So, are you seeing anything in the lawn that's bothering you right at the moment?
Oh, I see some weird, what I'm assuming is might be a little crabgrass, but my main reason for discontinuing my lawn care is that the last few times they were not very careful when they used the spray, and they killed some of my bedding plants, my landscape stuff. So and I have been considering doing this myself for a couple of years anyway, so that was kind of the final straw. So I just didn't know, you know, what to do for the fall. I know they put, I'm looking at my last statement, and they put a fertilizer and a broadleaf weed control down in June.
Okay, perfect.
Was the last application.
Perfect. Well, what first thing I want to encourage you to do is take prompt action, and it sounds like you already are, which is you're being proactive. And you're still in the game. A lot of people will discard or get rid of a lawn service, and they'll wait like a year or two, and maybe sometimes even longer before they pick up where they left off, and then all of a sudden they're in trouble. So what you're doing is to be commendable. So stay with it and be proactive. So as we turn the corner here, as we go into September, what I want you to do, I want to, in the fall months are the best time to get into the Fertiloom three-step program.
Okay.
And I want you to put down your first application of the Fertiloom three-step program, and that is the orange bag around Labor Day weekend. Okay? Now, you can do it any time throughout the course of September or even into the early part of, you know, October, but what we need is at least 6 weeks between applications in the fall. So the two fall applications are the most important, and it's the best time to get into a lawn program, especially doing it yourself, and it's really easy. So I want you to look for Fertiloom's Lawn Food Plus Iron at any of your local garden centers and nurseries, all right? And it comes in an orange bag. You will only find it at independent nurseries and garden centers. It comes in an orange bag. Now, because you're new to this, I don't know if you have a spreader or not.
I do.
And hopefully it's a rotary spreader versus a drop. You get a better application rate that way. So that's ideal. And wherever you go, whatever local nursery or garden center you go to, write down the style of spreader that you have so we can tell you what to adjust the opening to. And that should be in a numeric number there that you see on the spreader. And what you'll do, and I want you, if you can do it, I would like for you to fertilize early in September. So as we get rains in September, you can see your lawn green up, and you're going to get a beautiful deep green color in it because there's iron in Fertiloom's Lawn Food Plus Iron fertilizer. It's great.
Okay.
And then I want you to come back in the middle of November and do your second fall application. And then we're going to turn the corner into next year. Your lawn's going to be healthy, happy. It's going to look great. And you're going to put down your pre-emergent product sometime mid-March through the latter part of April. So that's the window.
Okay.
And if you have any other issues, you know, feel free to give us a call. But you sound like to me you're on track.
And I can, when I purchase the Lawn Food Plus Iron for the September application, will what I need for November also be available to purchase at the same time?
Yes, you're going to use that same bag. You're going to use that same, not the same bag you buy in September, but that same product. lawn
see,
food
I just
plus
didn't sound. Know if,
yeah.
If you carried the whole 9 yards
we
all
do.
At one time, or if you had to buy it as you needed it.
No, you could. It's your call. We at Jackson Florist and Garden Center, we have a lot of customers that come in and buy all three steps, and we store what they don't want to take.
Oh.
Or the homeowner also has the option to take it all home with them. And what we try to do as well, it's real easy. We'll write on your bag when to apply it, so sometimes people forget.
Okay.
And it's right there, and then you know when you need to apply it.
Okay.
All right.
And stay connected with us and take pictures. We'd love to help you out.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Bye. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And, Tony, we have a couple of more questions on Facebook we're going to try to get to. Plus, we also have Vicky on the line to talk about an event coming up. And we'll talk about some dwarf trees and spring bulbs. All coming up after the break, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have our friend Vicky on the line. Hi, Vicky. Thanks for holding on.
Hi. How are you all?
Fantastic. Tell us a little bit about what's going on with you.
Well, as many of you know, we raise a lot of heirloom tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And we are having our second annual tomato fest this coming week, the 12th, August 12th. From 2 to 6 in the afternoon, we have three of Cincinnati's finest chefs going to be here doing cooking demos. And, of course, we're going to sample tomatoes and have a salsa contest and all those little things. The biggest, the littlest tomato, fun things.
The biggest and littlest tomato.
Sure.
What would be the smallest?
Well, I know of one called Spoon that I'm raising, and if you had a tablespoon, it would probably hold 15, 20 little teeny weeny tomatoes.
Really?
Yeah.
That's tiny. So you can't use those on a sandwich, can you?
No, not sure you can. They're more of like a little popcorn snack, I'll call it. You know, tiny. Even smaller than popcorn.
And where is this going to be held?
It is going to be at our farm. We are located at 10570.
Vicky, do you have us on speakerphone?
No.
Okay.
Yourself.
George, just got a little. Could you repeat that? We got a little cell issue. For
an echo or something?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just on my cell.
Okay.
Our address, 10570 Big Bone Road, and that's in Union, Kentucky.
Great.
And we encourage everyone to bring their tomatoes they grew and enter them in our tasting or any of the other contests and make that salsa and bring it.
Okay.
That's what I like, the salsa. Tina made some the other day and it was too hot. She wouldn't even touch it.
Oh, no.
I like it hot, though.
Yeah, well, good.
But, we're going to get this info posted onto our page and encourage our listeners to come down and enjoy some tomatoes and just a good time.
It's appreciated, and they can follow us on our Facebook page under Thistle Hair, and it's H-A-I-R,
mm-hmm.
Farm Followers.
Perfect.
And they can also look at our event page under that and see more about the event.
All right. Well, I can attest to this, and if I get a chance to come down, Vicky, I will. It was spectacular last year. And that was the first time I was ever at your farm. Very nice, by the way. And you and Ed do a great job. And I get an opportunity. I'll put those pictures on Facebook from last year. There were so many tomatoes, you couldn't eat them all. They were beautiful. You did a wonderful job. And the weather's looking really good, too, hopefully. And are you getting some color? Are things turning?
Yeah, this week we picked 4 racks of tomatoes. So hopefully by next weekend we'll have plenty. And then, like I said, I encourage others to bring theirs too.
Perfect.
To the event.
All right. Will Colonel D be there?
The Colonel will be, and Chef Matt Bushel from Virgil's, who works with the Colonel, will also be here.
Right. Perfect. That sounds like a great time.
Well, wish you all the best of luck and hope you have weather like you have today for your event.
Thank you very much.
All right, Vicky. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye, Vicky.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Ruth on the line who's got a question about dwarf trees and spring bulbs. What are you thinking about, Ruth?
Oh, yes. I was wondering if you know of anywhere that I could purchase a dwarf lilac tree or a hummingbird vine?
She's in Indiana.
Oh, Governor C. McCabe's.
Okay, yes.
And is it Mingus? I know the name changed, Ernie. You got to help me out here. Mingus Farm. That's a. It's under a different. Lozier. Is it Danny Lozier? I apologize for that. That's my fault. But anyway, stop over there in McCabe's, and they should still have some decent landscape items on hand, and. Thank you. A dwarf lilac, or are you thinking with the dwarf Korean, or are you thinking bloomerang?
Well, I just wanted a lilac tree of some kind, but I have to put it in a container is the problem.
Well, that can be done, and it can be a little dicey. So just a real quick tip, and I'm glad you mentioned that, in a container. Anytime you're in a container, you know, we go through the winter months, we're playing Russian roulette, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
So what happens is, since we're above ground, things behave totally different. So what you need to do is bring that up close to the house, but first put it in a large container, as large as you can possibly handle.
Okay.
The more soil volume you have there, the more of the benefit it's going to be to you. If it's a small pot, you get that freezing and thawing actions, and the more often that happens, that's what's detrimental on plants in containers.
Okay. Can you also plant spring bulbs in containers and winter them over?
Absolutely. You can do what we call lasagna layering. Lasagna layering. If you use a large enough pot, and if this doesn't make any sense to you, hopefully you can Google it and check it out, or anyone else as far as that goes. But the bigger the pot, what you can do, like on the bottom, you can start out with tulips and then layer it with enough soil, and maybe put some hyacinths in there, layer it with enough soil, put some crocus in there. So what we're doing, we're building this lasagna planting effect, so you'll have continuous color for some time.
Okay.
So that's perfect. And, you know, really you could do it in one of two ways. And it's important that we go through a cooling period, especially for tulips and fall bulbs, and they'll be coming out relatively soon.
Okay.
And, you know, they need to go through at least a 16-week cooling period. So, you know, have at it. That would be a fun little thing to do. You have any grandkids or any kids?
Yeah. I have a 6-year-old grandson that's going to help me. He's
there you go.
He helps me plant everything.
Perfect. That gets them active, keeps them busy, and it's always a fun surprise when they get to see the fruits of their labor.
Right, exactly. Thank you so much for your help. Y'all have a great day.
You too. Thanks. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we have another Facebook question about a tree, and hopefully it will survive. But we do need to pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have a question on Facebook, came from Amanda Dalton. Says her and her husband have I might not say this correctly, catalpa tree in their front yard, and it is infested with ants. She also has a lot of black caterpillars and is wondering what she could use to stop the ants. Plus, they also lost a tree in their front yard that was next to it. They don't want it to happen to this tree.
Right. Yeah, the catalpa tree gets quite large. It's called the cigar tree.
Okay.
Remember that? The long cigars?
We would
whip and throw those at one another when we were youngsters.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my grandpa had some catalpa trees, too. And also the catalpa worm is great for fishing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There you go. Take that on down to the river and sit on the bank one night. you won't have to make those weedy balls.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever fish with weedy balls?
Well, they never got to the creek.
Yeah.
See, I was always eating them.
Just crunched on them.
Remind me to tell you about my first camping experience one day.
But anyway, going back to the catalpa tree, the ant issue, you know, we were talking about that a little earlier with a caller that High Yields Turf Ranger is a great granular product to spread around the base of that tree and water it in. And that should help you a lot with some of your ant issues. And as far as, did you say caterpillars?
Yes, some black caterpillars.
I don't know, you know, how big this tree is and so forth, but you can always spray spinosad. You know, that will take care of some caterpillars, or BT. You know, that's an easy approach to use and go after them or malathion. Mm-hmm. It's totally up to them. But I really wouldn't worry too much about it. But that tree gets quite large and an interesting tree, to say the least. You don't hear too many people talk about the old catalpa anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The
big leaf.
Right.
Yeah.
I didn't. It took me a minute to try to figure out if I was going to be saying that correctly. Your post about the crepe myrtles has generated a little more conversation, too. Joanne says that a friend of hers gave her a 6-inch plant 3 years ago, and it grew into a great big beautiful bush, but mm-hmm. it still doesn't have any blooms. What can she do?
Well, you know, first thing that's going to come to mind is how much sun is it getting? Mm-hmm. We need at least 6 hours of sun a day, and you know, that's essential in getting the bloom production that we can get from the crepe myrtle. Mm-hmm. Another issue is, you know, is it continuously dying back to the ground? Because a lot of times, some crepe myrtles take longer than others to bloom.
Okay.
And maybe because it is dying back to the ground and not getting enough sun, that it's not allowing enough time throughout the growing season to get that bloom production. So she's got really nice green foliage, and it's nice and lush. You know, it might be a sun issue. Did you say it was a cutting?
She gave it, or a friend of hers gave it to her in a plant. Or in a pot, rather, a 6-inch mm-hmm. plant.
Okay. But the reason why I asked, I thought you said that.
No, let me take that back. Gave sure. her a 6-inch plant 3 years ago.
Okay.
So it may have been a cutting.
Well, here's where I'm headed with that, and I don't know if this even applies. But what I'm about to say really applies towards, you know, lilacs mm-hmm. and also in a lot of cases, wisteria. Now, if something is propagated via seed, you know, with lilacs and sure. wisteria,
yeah.
it may take several years before you ever see them bloom.
Gotcha.
Okay. Versus, we always like to take cuttings from plants that we know that bloom. And usually that we know that it blooms, it's typically an earlier bloomer than it is something started from seed.
Gotcha.
And that doesn't hold true always.
Mm-hmm.
But you just said something to me, and I'm wondering, if it was a 6-inch plant at one given time, was it seed started or was it from a cutting?
Mm-hmm.
And then asking that question, I really don't know if that same would apply like it does with wisteria and lilacs, the same for a crepe myrtle.
Gotcha.
So that would be of interest as well.
Yep.
I would need to do a little research or digging. But if that's not the case, I would seem to think that she should be seeing some bloom, and mm-hmm. it might be totally sun. And the other thing that they can do is use a fertilizer that might have a little bit more of a higher middle number with phosphorus, which helps promote blooms. So she can do one of those two things. Make sure it's getting enough sun and a little bit more phosphorus with a fertilization mm-hmm. and see where that takes us.
Well, we're going to stay with a crepe myrtle and, again, stay with our Facebook page. Marianne Schneider from over in Villa Hills asked a question that hers dies back every year and comes back big but never blooms. That might be the same issue
Could
you were
be.
Just describing for Joanne.
You know, it's one of those things, too. That I always have to ask as well, you know, there are varieties of crepe myrtles that are a little bit more tolerant of our conditions here versus others.
Mm-hmm.
There are some that are a zone 6, which would be hardy, you know, to our area. But if it's cold enough and severe enough of a winter, it can knock them back. But there's also those crepe myrtles that are a zone 7, which really takes us down into maybe southern Kentucky, down into throughout Tennessee, maybe into the upper portion of Georgia. So those that are zoned into that category are probably more temperamental, and we lose them more often than we do. And when I say lose them, meaning that they die back to the ground mm-hmm. on an annual basis. And again, planting a crepe myrtle, we have to give them opportunities. And part of that is, you know, planting them in an area where they're somewhat protected, but also getting at least 6 hours or more sun. That's essential. So hopefully that's it. Again, what we said with the the prior question, maybe a little fertilizer that has a higher middle number, and let's see where that ends up taking us.
749 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. And as we mentioned earlier in the show, when we were out playing golf yesterday, a friend of mine, Pookie, posed this question. When does a stick stop being a stick? When is a branch, and what is a twig? And I told him we would answer this question for him. The trunk of the tree is called a log when it's no longer a part of a living tree. The limb comes from the log, which is the trunk of the tree, and those are branches. And from the branches, the sticks grow off of the branches are called twigs. So now, Pookie, you've got all that information. Feel free to share that with everybody down at the log cabin.
Can you tell us that one more time in that same fashion in order?
No, I cannot. That does it for us in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Gorgeous weather this weekend. Get out and get something done. We'll talk to you next week.